Suns Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the January 13th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. It's the fifth day of competition at the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Cameroon. I'd like to see a little more scoring as we head into Thursday's matches. So far, we've had a total of 12 goals in 12 matches for an average of one goal each match. Come on, guys, let's find the back of the net in Cameroon. Joining us now from Cameroon with a spicy Nations Cup update is Samson Omale. Sporty Thursday greetings, Samson.
Sporty Thursday greetings to you, Sonny, from Garoua in Cameroon. Day 4 of the African Cup of Nations witnessed the conclusion of the opening round of matches in all of the groups, with the Mali and Tunisia game ending in a controversial manner. Mali beat Tunisia 1-0 in the match prematurely halted by the referee, who later tried to restart the game only for the Tunisians to refuse to retake to the field. Experienced Zambian official Jani Chikazwe, who took charge of the 2017 Cup of Nations final, initially blew for the final whistle on 85 minutes as he got his timekeeping all wrong. After then playing on, he repeated the error when he blew for full time again before the clock had ticked over to the 90 minutes. Tunisia were furious and officials stormed onto the pitch in protest, but the man of the match trophy was handed out and the post-match news conference in full swing before Confederation of African Football Officials decided 4 additional minutes should be played. Mali came out onto the pitch again 40 minutes after the controversy began, but Tunisia refused to play on and Chikazwe ended the game for a third time. Moses Oju and Victor Modo are both journalists covering the African Cup of Nations. They told the Sunny Side of Sports that the referee controversy should not take the shine off the African Cup of Nations.
It's a human error, but maybe it was lackadaisical. You know, he ought to have known, especially when the Tunisian officials, he could see the way they were telling him. You know, that time is not yet time, and he didn't do anything. It was incumbent, it was obstinate, so definitely not good enough. It's quite disgraceful.
The standard of officiating has been good, but for this single, basically isolated incident, I totally understand why the team that was behind refused to come out to play the little time left, because genuinely, if they appeal, they might have an opportunity to maybe replay 45 minutes or maybe replay a good 10, 15 minutes or something. So they'll probably want to take that chance. That match cannot be replayed. Mali has one goal up to 80-something minutes, will not agree to have the match replayed from start. You get the rather find a junction, a starting point that still gives them their 1-0 advantage and doesn't drag on for too long. So CAF has a very big issue on their hands that they have to sort out within the coming days.
The second match of the doubleheader in Limbe started 45 minutes late because of the earlier controversy, but the delay did not hinder Gambia, who went ahead after 10 minutes when Abile Jalo scored from the edge of the penalty area. Gambia could have won by more goals, but were denied by sharp goalkeeping from Boubacar Diop. Also on Wednesday, Ivory Coast beat Equatorial Guinea as expected in Douala, but by only a lone goal. For a look on how the teams have fared so far on match day 1, I sat down for a Sunny Side of Sport one-on-one chat with Omar Akatuba, a football analyst and journalist at the media center of the Stade Omnisports de Garoua.
I see the big teams rising up. Like Algeria, they have to get a win. Egypt, they have to get a win. Cameroon, they look okay, but weren't too convincing. But maybe they are hosts. Ghana as well. Ghana weren't too bad against Morocco, to be honest. They created a couple of chances. They played quite like Nigeria. They showed their physical strength. They showed their pace, their energy, but tactically, they were lacking. And that's when Morocco, you know, nicked it. So they will want to get a win desperately because this is Ghana, the second most successful country in the tournament. If I'm not mistaken, there's Ghana, there's Cameroon, and then there's Nigeria. So they want to prove a point because they've got a new coach who's been there before with them, who knows Ghana very well. And he seems to have the love of the people, and not winning a game will be disappointing. So I see the big teams rising up. Algeria will win, Ghana will win their next game. Morocco will continue on a fine note. Egypt, they are going to tear Guinea-Bissau apart. And I see the big teams rising.
Now, I know it's too early in the day to ask this, but do you think with the matches we've seen so far, we've given the best advertisement of African football to the rest of the world?
Of course. Nigeria showed that the AFCON is a big tournament. Nigeria showed that watching the AFCON can never be a boring moment. And that is a good advertisement for the AFCON after what it suffered prior to the tournament from the Europeans and all the, you know, embarrassment, insults, and what have you. So what we are seeing from Nigeria, from Morocco, Ghana, from Cameroon, Burkina Faso, shows that we can play good football in Africa. And it's a good thing. And if you go by Nigeria's performance, being the best game we've seen so far in this tournament, you can say that Nigeria right now becomes automatically one of the big favorites. Before the tournament, Nigeria wasn't seen as a favorite. But now, we are one of the big favorites. I saw Senegal. They struggled against Zimbabwe. Algeria struggled against Sierra Leone. These are the two first and second favorites before the tournament for me. But what I've seen today, bring them on. I think Nigeria looks very good. Hi, my name is Omar Katsuba, international football journalist. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports and a very massive, sporty African Nations Cup greetings to you all from Cameroon.
There was more embarrassment on day four as the wrong anthem was played three times for Mauritania ahead of their opening game against Gambia in Limbe. Mauritania players looked on in bemusement, some shaking their heads as two unsuccessful attempts were made to play the country's national anthem before kick-off. In Thursday's matches, host Cameroon can move into the last 16 if they beat Ethiopia in Yaoundé, followed by Burkina Faso against the Cape Verde Islands at the Olympic Stadium. Arsenal striker Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang returned to training with the Gabon squad after testing negative for COVID-19. The 32-year-old who is out of favour at Arsenal and was stripped of the captaincy last month, and Mario Limena both tested positive last week and missed Gabon's opening 1-0 win over Comoros on Monday. However, coach Patrice Neveu is isolating after testing positive according to the Gabonese Football Federation.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale reporting from Cameroon with another spicy package of Africa Cup of Nations football news.
Hello, Jonathan Mensah here, Black Stars defender and Columbus Crew captain. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
Jonathan Mensah and the Black Stars of Ghana go against the Panthers of Gabon in their next Nations Cup match on Friday in Yaoundé, Cameroon. Ghana lost its opening Nations Cup match to Morocco 1-0 on Monday, while Gabon beat Comoros 1-0. Yawafusu Larbi joins us now from Accra with an update on Ghana's preparations for the Gabonese. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Ghana's campaign at the Africa Cup of Nations started in misery as the Black Stars lost to the Atlas Lions of Morocco. The Black Stars, who had lost to Algeria days before in a preparatory game, looked a pale shadow of themselves in their AFCON opener. After that friendly, coach of the side, Milovan Rajevac, told the media that it was only a preparatory game that would have no bearing on the first game at the Cup of Nations. But as the referee whistled for the end of the game, they walked off, having recorded another loss. Morocco's Sofiane Boufal had sent a few Moroccan fans in the stadium jubilant. Ghana's Joseph Paintel, who was one of the team's brightest spots, says the game did not go as planned.
That was really, really good. We did everything possible, but unfortunately, we did not have the win. We keep going as a team.
The loss against Morocco has not gone down well with Ghanaian football fans. It seems now that a country might not qualify to the next stage of the competition, but former Black Stars player Anthony Bafo, who is in Cameroon to monitor the team's progress, has allayed those fears. He believes that Ghana has what it takes to improve in the next games.
You know, first match is never easy. We have to agree it was not the best performance of the Black Stars. And the first half, I think, tactically, we did well. And it was a very tight game. I was really going for 0-0, to be honest. And then we considered a goal. From now on, What is very, very important to be tactically very orientated, to pay attention to details, and to win our next two matches, which are coming up against Comoros and Gabon, or the other way around. It's very, very important. I just watched the training from majority of the players who didn't play in the first match. The intensity of the training was quite good. So let's keep the hope alive and all is not over.
The next game for Ghana, though, is Gabon. The Gabonese won their first group game against the Comoros Islands and have found their voices and strength to qualify to the next stage of the competition. Their fans have been in high spirits all week.
Of course, we are used to AFCON and we are here in Cameroon. I think you have to revenge what Cameroon came and take the trophy in Gabon. And we are confident, so confident.
We'll defeat Ghana and probably we'll also defeat Morocco. We are very confident.
Ghana has adopted a tag over the years as being slow starters at competitions. Since 2010, they have lost two opening day games at the competition, one in 2010 and another in 2015, and have gone on to play in the final. President of the Ghana Football Association, Ketu Kreku, who was present at the team's recovery training session, believes the Black Stars are in good shape and will prove their worth in the game against Gabon to salvage their AFCON campaign.
Let me say that we came here to be competitive. We came here to truly represent our dear country, and we came here to make ourselves proud. And we knew that we had to play three games to make it to the next level, okay? We played a very tough game against Morocco. I thought we were very structured, we were very disciplined. Unfortunately, I mean, that ball found its way into the nets. But the team has recovered ever since. Training sessions has been very, very good. I mean, you saw today's training sessions, which sends a clear signal about the readiness of the boys to come back to winning ways. And I'm extremely positive about our game against the Gabonese on Friday. I think that the boys have recovered well. They'll be very, very competitive. And I respectfully ask Ghanaians to throw our support behind the squad. This is a team that is made up of predominantly young players. We have 17 debutants at the AFCON. And that tells you clearly that the future of our national team is very, very bright.
The Black Stars play the Panthers of Gabon at the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium in Yaoundé on Friday. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yao Fusilabi in Accra.
Thanks, Yao. In Douala, Cameroon on Wednesday, Ivory Coast began its Nations Cup campaign with a 1-0 victory against Equatorial Guinea. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with African football analyst Benga James.
On the game between the Elephants of Ivory Coast, two-time winners of AFCON, and Minus, relatively, Equatorial Guinea, who are ranked 58 places below Ivory Coast on the FIFA ranking log. I mean, it was another tight affair. And if you look at all the first round of matches played so far at the AFCON in Cameroon, most of the games have been so tight, except one or two. So, I mean, the games have been typical of this ongoing AFCON. And in this particular game, one would have expected that Ivory Coast would run riot or at least be able to show class above the Equatorial Guinea national team. But that was not the case. And if not for some misses, glitched-edged misses from Equatorial Guinea players, especially from Iban Salvador, and of course that volley from Marchin that didn't go in, then it would have been a different ball game. Perhaps it would have ended in a drawn game. So for me, there was no much to take between the two sides. And one is beginning to think about the quality, the standard of games at the AFCON because of the kind of games we have seen so far. And the reason for me is not far, perhaps the teams and the players, they have enough time to get together and have a proper preparation for this championship. But again, it's the first round of matches we have seen. Now players and teams are beginning to have time together. I don't think there is any team at the AFCON now that have not spent about 8 or 10 days together. And now they will be spending more days together before they get into the second round of games and the third round of group games. And then maybe when we get into those next two rounds of games, then the boys will be separated from the men. But at the moment, I think everybody is just trying to feel their way into the tournament, and that's what happened to Ivory Coast. Because one would have thought that with players like Max Gradel, with Bale from Manchester United, with Nicolas Pepe from Arsenal, and of course with the Crystal Palace Ivory Coast should have done a lot better. They should have put a daylight between themselves and their opponents, but we didn't see all of that happen. Perhaps from the next game, we'll begin to see teams putting that distance in quality, putting that gulf of standard between them and the opponents, putting it on show, and it becomes clear for everybody to see. Ivory Coast clearly struggled in that match yesterday, and if not for that early strike in the 15 minutes by the captain of the Ivorian national team, Max Gradel, maybe it would have ended in a stalemate, and that wouldn't have been the perfect way the Elephants, who were champions as recently as 2015, that is not how they would have loved to kick off their tournament. But like I said, it's still early days. It's first round of matches we've seen. From the next round of matches or next two round of matches, which will be the last group games for all the groups in the AFCON, we'll begin to see better performances. And who knows, we'll also begin to see outstanding performances. And from that game between Ivory Coast and Equatorial Guinea, I can't really pick one outstanding performer. I can't. By the standard of the players that Ivory Coast have, that I've mentioned, I don't think they lived up to their true billing.
Defending champions Algeria were held to a goalless draw in the same group. Did it come as a surprise to you?
It was a huge surprise when the Desert Foxes of Algeria, who are defending champions, were also held to a pulsating goalless draw by Sierra Leone. One would have thought that given the pedigree of Algeria, given that they are defending champions, and form of some of their star performers, especially the captain of Algeria, Riyad Mahrez, who does his thing for Manchester City in the English Premier League, it shouldn't have been much of a day's job for them to have seen Sierra Leone, no disrespect, to have seen Sierra Leone off. But again, like we've been saying for many years now, there are no longer small teams or little teams. There are no minnows in African football again. And that's what we also saw in that game between the Desert Foxes of Algeria and the Sierra Leonean national team. And therefore, Algeria, if they are serious, if they are resolved, and if they are focused on defending the title they won last time in Egypt, they will need to up their game. They will certainly need to begin to turn up from their next game and show that quality and show that standard that helped them to win the title 2 years ago in Egypt. That they didn't show at all in the game against Sierra Leone. And for Sierra Leone, they will be fancying their chances now, especially in that group, because we've also seen what Ivory Coast, the other favorite team in that group, can do. And they didn't do so much. They didn't do anything to convince anybody. They didn't do anything to scare any opponent for in that group. So Sierra Leone will be thinking that, okay, if we could hold the almighty Algeria, why not? We can do the same with the Elephants of Cote d'Ivoire. Then we'll throw everything into the works when we strut our stuff against Equatorial Guinea, and maybe we'll have amassed enough points to see us through to the next round. It's an interesting group, and it's a group that is still open at the moment, save for Ivory Coast, who already have 3 points in the bag. But the chasing pack, Algeria, of course, we will always favor Algeria to rediscover their mojo and, of course, move on. Then Sierra Leone, too, having drawn Algeria, because what those kind of results do for you is that they give you bags of confidence. And from the bags of confidence they would have taken from that commendable performance, they will fancy their chances in their next round of matches. So it's still a bit open. Apart from Cote d'Ivoire, for Algeria and for Sierra Leone in that group, they will be fancying their chances.
That's African football analyst Benga James. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Benin City, Nigeria.
Sport greetings. This is Benga James, an African football analyst. You're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including Americans are increasingly frustrated over long lines to get tested for COVID-19 and a shortage of testing kits for use at home. We'll have this topic and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Turning to tennis, world number one Novak Djokovic was confirmed in the Australian Open draw at a delayed ceremony on Thursday, even though his bid for a record 21st Grand Slam title could yet be canceled by Australian authorities. Tournament director Craig Tiley declined to take questions at the end of the subdued ceremony, with Australia's immigration minister still weighing whether to revoke Djokovic's visa for a second time. Craig Gabriel reports from Sydney, Australia.
The Australian Open draw was 2 minutes from starting and they pulled the plug. The advisory said it was postponed until further notice. The immediate reaction was that it had to do with Novak Djokovic. Is he in the draw? There's been a sudden development, but he's been tossed out. Well, it was all these sort of questions. But this is the day the immigration minister was due to make his decision about Djokovic, stay or deport. But nothing came. And about an hour later, the draw went ahead. And there was Djokovic in the lineup. And he was to face a qualifier. The minister, by the way, can announce his decision any time. And if it goes against Djokovic, he's pulled out of the draw. And there's a bit of shuffling around the draw. Djokovic has a qualifier in the top half with him, Alexander Zverev and Rafa Nadal, while Daniil Medvedev, Stefanos Tsitsipas and Andrei Rublev are on the other side. In the women's, the top half seems stacked, led by Ash Barty, but she's joined by Naomi Osaka, Belinda Bencic, Vika Azarenka and Maria Sakkari, while the other half has Arina Sabalenka with her dodgy serve, Iga Swiatek and Simona Halep. High visibility match, Emma Raducanu against Sloane Stephens, who was married only last week. On court in Sydney, Andy Murray is into the semis for the first time at a tournament since Antwerp in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, been a while for me. I do feel like I was getting, well, I have been getting closer in the last few months, and, you know, my results would suggest that. Yeah, good to get there this early in the season, and yeah, hopefully can keep building from here and have a strong year.
And there were wins for Barbora Krejcikova and Dasha Kasatkina, who upset Garbine Muguruza. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sports, Sydney.
Thanks, Craig. VOA's Gwen Uten joins us now with more on Novak Djokovic. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Serbian tennis star Novak Djokovic is not known for making many errors on the court. But on Wednesday, the world number one admitted to a major error off the court. In a written statement via social media, Djokovic said his support team made a human error on travel documents that were required for his trip to Australia. On the form, his team mistakenly ticked the no box in response to whether or not he had traveled elsewhere in the 14 days before arriving in Australia. The Australian Border Force is investigating whether or not Djokovic has made a false travel claim. The latest incident has added to what has turned out to be a controversial visit for Djokovic in the land down under. All travelers to Australia are required required to be vaccinated against COVID-19. But Djokovic said he contracted the virus in December and was granted a medical exemption. When he landed in Australia last week, he was held for several days while an investigation took place and was later released. Now, with his travel documents under scrutiny, the patience of some residents in Melbourne has worn thin. And Australians Tehan Ismain, Rohini Punith, and Michael Wilson tell Reuters News the tennis star's actions off the court have left them unimpressed.
I don't like his arrogance. I feel he's come across as he's above it all. But it does feel like we've stuffed up on our side. And so it's a bit of a mess. But you know, I've seen his statements, and it does seem that he's been telling a few fibs too. So I think he should just probably go back.
I really respect the thing that he did that, but I don't think, like, still, because allowing him in would still put the bad example, because COVID is a risky situation, right? And then even if he did a 14-day, like, isolation, he could still be positive and then, like, infect people and stuff like that. But, yeah, because of an inequality thing, I don't think my viewpoint would change, yeah.
If he's saying that he's filled out the form wrong, then, you know, can't be one rule for one and one for the other when we've all been made to have a vaccination to keep our jobs, and then someone comes in on an exemption. Doesn't seem really fair.
However, Melbourne resident Nick Sukla says Djokovic should be given time to correct his mistakes in the days leading up to the Australian Open tournament.
I think we should give him the chance to correct that human error or mistake, whoever he has committed. But I think it's good for every one of us to see him playing on the court, right? And definitely I'm desperately waiting for him to just come onto the court and play in front of Australian people and entertain us.
Australia's immigration minister, Alex Hawke, is considering whether or not to revoke Djokovic's reinstated visa and send him home. Deportation could include a 3-year ban from entering Australia. That would be devastating news for Djokovic, who holds the all-time Australian Open record with 9 titles and is hoping to clinch a record 21 Grand Slams at this year's tournament, scheduled to begin on January 17th. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
In a matchup of the National Basketball Association's top 2 teams in the Eastern Conference, Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets blew out the host Chicago Bulls on Wednesday night. We'll hear from Durant now in this report by the AP's David Schuster in Chicago.
Kevin Durant scored 27 points and James Harden had 25 and 16 assists as the Nets pulled away in the second half for a 138-112 victory over the Bulls. It was just a 2-point lead at the half, but then the Nets outscored the Bulls 39-19 in the third quarter. Durant says it was a complete squad victory.
Team basketball is the best way to win when everybody feels involved in the offense and they're making plays for each other on the defensive side of the ball. Like, you know, it's beautiful when you get to play like that.
Kyrie Irving had 9 points in just his third game since returning to the team. Zach LaVine scored 22 points as the Bulls saw their lead over the Nets fall to just a game and a half in the Eastern Conference. David Schuster, Chicago.
Thanks, David. The other winners in the NBA Wednesday night were the Boston Celtics, the Charlotte Hornets, the Miami Heat, the New York Knicks, the Houston Rockets, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Sacramento Kings, and last but not least, the Washington Wizards. Go Wizards! And that wraps up the January 13th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.